Genesis 29, verse 1. Then Jacob went on his journey and came into the land of the people of the east. And he looked, and behold, a well in the field, and lo, there were three flocks of sheep lying by it, for out of that well they watered the flocks, and a great stone was upon the well's mouth, and thither were all the flocks gathered. And they rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the sheep, and put the stone again upon the well's mouth in his place. And Jacob said unto them, My brethren, whence be ye? And they said, Of Haran are we. And he said unto them, Know ye Laban, the son of Nahor? And they said, We know him. And he said unto them, Is he well? And they said, He is well. And behold, Rachel his daughter cometh with the sheep. And he said, Lo, it is yet high day, neither is it time that the cattle should be gathered together. Water ye the sheep, and go and feed them. And they said, We cannot, until all the flocks be gathered together, until they roll the stone from the well's mouth. Then we water the sheep. And while he yet spake with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she kept them. And it came to pass, when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went near, and rolled the stone from the well's mouth, and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. And Jacob kissed Rachel, and lifted up his voice, and wept. And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's brother, and that he was Rebekah's son. And she ran and told her father. And it came to pass, when Laban heard the tidings of Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him, and embraced him, and kissed him, and brought him to his house. And he told Laban all these things. And Laban said to him, Surely thou art my bone and my flesh. And he abode with him the space of a month. In Psalm 37 and verse 5 we have these words, Commit thy way unto the Lord, trust also in him, and he shall bring it to pass. This is one of those golden verses of Scripture, and there is room here for every child of God. It is referring to thy way, our way in life. And sometimes it can be a very difficult way or a very puzzling way. And so David writes in this psalm, Hand it over to the Lord, commit thy way unto the Lord, or as it is in the margin, roll thy way upon the Lord. And we have the idea of putting the thing into his hands, so that whatever the difficulty or the perplexity, it's no longer our responsibility but his. Commit thy way unto the Lord, roll thy way upon the Lord. It's now in his hands. And then it says, believe, trust also in him. Leave it with him. It's no longer your concern or worry, but it is his. Trust also in him. And then thirdly, observe. He shall bring it to pass. Look out for what the Lord will do in his great faithfulness with that burden that you have committed to him, thy way. So three things then: hand it over, commit or roll it upon the Lord, believe, trust also in him, observe, he shall bring it to pass, whatever he is pleased to do about it for you. Now we can see this in the life of Jacob. We know something about his way, don't we? his way, it led from the land of Canaan to the land of Paddan Aram, and in particular Haran. And it was a way that was 450 miles distance. And if he covered, say, 30 miles a day, it would take him 15 days on foot to travel there. He'd only just started, as we saw in Genesis 28, and the way was really quite daunting. He was on his own. There were robbers, wild animals, all dangers of that kind. He may well have got lost. He didn't know for sure the correct route. And when he arrived, how was he possibly going to locate that other branch of Abraham's family there with Laban, his mother's brother, and the rest of them? Well, it was all a way that was really very unenviable. Well, last time we saw this wonderful dream vision he was given, and you remember in verse 15 it included some precious promises, and one of them was this: God said to him, "Behold, I am with thee, and will keep thee in all places whither thou goest." Now, that was a promise of God's presence and a promise of guidance and safe conduct for this journey. And so Jacob, therefore, must do what David recommends in Psalm 37, verse 5. He must hand this matter over to God, mustn't he? "Commit thy way unto the Lord." He must believe, trust also in him, and he must observe and watch and see how God will deal with it. He shall bring it to pass. Now, I want us in the first 14 verses of Genesis 29 to see how, in particular, the second and third of those is what Jacob in fact does. He believes, trust also in him, and he observes. God shall bring it to pass. So the two points are these: believing the promise and observing the providence. Let's see how these things work out, because this is on record, as always, isn't it, for our encouragement and for our personal profit. This is the God of Jacob appearing for his servant, and he will surely appear for us if we do the same. Believing the promise, observing the providence. Believing the promise first. It's in the opening of verse 1. "Then Jacob went on his journey." Next morning then, when he awoke, as we've seen, after the best night's sleep he ever had in his life because of that dream vision, he is called upon to trust the promise of God. "Behold, I am with thee, and will keep thee in all places whither thou goest." And so you see, he ventured forth, didn't he? Relying upon what God said. "Then Jacob went on his journey." Those words, "Behold, I am with thee, and will keep thee in all places whither thou goest." Those words were ringing in his ears, and he kept them in his heart. That's all he had: the bare promise of God. But that's all he needed, wasn't it? And he went on his journey. And dear friends, really, sometimes God gives us nothing more than his bare word. Nothing more. And sometimes we are brought to a position where we've got to trust the scripture in its nakedness, if I may put it like that. Nothing more. Simply what God has pledged himself to give us or to be to us. He went on his journey, standing upon the promise of God, as it were. And look, he found that the Lord blessed as he did so. He went on his journey. If you've got a margin Bible, hope you have. If you haven't, you're missing out on a lot. You should consider getting a margin Bible because then you'll have extra insight into the meaning of many verses in the Bible. Well, in the margin there, against the word went, you have the Hebrew rendering, the more literal Hebrew rendering, lift up his feet. And you get the picture, don't you? He went on his way and he found that he had a new joy in his heart and a spring in his step. And he found he was able to stride out confidently and optimistically. There was an alacrity about his walk now. He went on his journey. He lifted up his feet. And this is a great contrast to how he was before. We can imagine that first day's travelling. How when he left home, he went pretty slowly and with rather heavy steps, feeling his circumstances very keenly. But all is different now. He's striding, walking along with joy. And he's no longer burdened. The future no longer looks bleak and uncertain. He's like a new man. And that is what the Lord did as soon as he stepped out trusting in him. Now, nothing had materially changed. It was exactly the same, wasn't it, as far as his circumstances were concerned. But you see, Jacob was different. And that's what happens, you see, when we trust to a promise maybe that God has personally given to us, and we act upon it by simply believing it and simply going on thinking about it, venturing on it, trusting it, and expecting that God will honour his word. That's what a verse like Romans 12 and verse 2 means, for instance. Sounds a strange word perhaps, but part of the meaning of this verse is illustrated by the case of Jacob. Romans 12 verse 2, it says, "Be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind." The renewing of your mind. In other words, when you think about something in a new way, when God's promise comes to you and you are given understanding of it, and it is wonderfully applied to you, God seals it to you, your thinking's changed. And you see everything in a totally fresh way now, a more encouraging way. A light seems to shine upon your circumstances. You feel a peace and a joy transformed by the renewing of your mind. The promise is made clear to you. You see it, take it to yourself, and it changes how you feel. Nothing has altered in your actual circumstances, maybe, but something has altered in your heart and spirit, and you are blessed and wonderfully encouraged. Or as the familiar verse in Nehemiah 8 and verse 10 puts it, "The joy of the Lord is your strength." Jacob went on his journey, lifted up his feet, and had alacrity and spring in his steps. The joy of the Lord now came to be a strength to him as he went on his journey. The journey from Canaan to this point in Bethel was one thing, but the journey from Bethel to his destination was a totally different thing. And Jacob was two different men at these stages. And you see, the explanation for why sometimes we as Christians are happier and more encouraged some days rather than others is simply this. It isn't always, is it, that things have changed for the better for us. It's more like we've started the day better. God has blessed us maybe in his word and applied some good promise to us which we've been able to take to ourselves and make our own and act on the truth of it. And we found a strength and a joy coming to us. And we've lifted up our feet, as it were, and we've felt relieved of burden and worry and care, and the Lord's joy and assurance has come to us. Hebrews 6, verse 2, you see, "Be not slothful but through faith and patience follow those who are inheritors of the promise, believing the promise and persevering. That's what patience means. Not just a quiet waiting for something to happen, but patience means fortitude and perseverance. Through faith and patience, follow those who have inherited the promises like that. Follow Jacob's example. So here's Jacob, you see, trusting also in the Lord, believing the promise. And that's a good lesson for us, dear friends, isn't it? Because whatever particular need we have in life, however difficult the way for us or perplexing the path, God has stored up in his word some promise that will apply to your case and to mine. And if we're familiar with the scriptures, and if we underline in red pen the promises we come to and memorize them, store them in our hearts, the Holy Spirit will bring them to our remembrance and seal them to us at special times of need. It'll be as if the Lord has promised certain things over again to us, and he'll raise our hope and our expectation, and we'll be able to trust in the Lord along the lines of what he's pledged to give us and to be to us. Well, we know here what it was. I am with thee and will keep thee in all places whither thou goest. Jacob went on his journey in the strength of that promise, and he found a joy and strength coming to him. Well, that's the first thing. Now, the other is this: observing the providence. Because really, what God's providence is the outworking of the promise, isn't it? God, by his faithfulness, makes his promises, storing them up in scripture. And providence is really God's working in our lives and in this world to accomplish the promise, or the promises for us, as he performs all things for us. Well, how did it work here for Jacob? Well, we can see in the rest of the verses. And it starts, look, when it says in the second part of verse 1, he came into the land of the people of the east. Now, this means he was near his destination, the country northeast of Canaan, toward Padan Aram in Mesopotamia. And it's not long before he sees that God has indeed guided. And let's just note how particular and detailed was God's guidance to him here. Look at verse 2. It had to do with the very spot where he needed to be. And he looked. It suggests, you see, he was on the lookout for something. He looked, and behold, he saw it. A well in the field. The very spot. Do you remember chapter 24? And do you remember Abraham's elderly servant Eliezer, whom Abraham sent to this very place to fetch a wife from this very family for Isaac, Abraham's son? And what is the first place that the servant arrives at? A well. And he stands there by the well, and he asks the Lord for a sign, doesn't he? The Lord will point out which of the young women it is whom God has chosen for the son of his master, and so on. And it was, of course, Rebekah who came to that well and offered to water his camels as well, and so on, and it proved to be the very girl. But you see, Jacob is at this well now, and there is plenty of evidence to suggest this is the very same well. Did Rebekah tell Jacob about this before he left home? He may have said, well, mother, how am I going to find my way to your brother's household and where they live and the other branch of Abraham's family? How am I going to find my way? It's 450 miles away and I've never been there before. Ah, she says, Trust in the Lord, and he will guide you. But when you come to the beginning of that country, look for the well. And he looked, and behold, a well. You see, God had guided, and God was with him in the way which he went. I imagine that there were plenty of other cities, plenty of other fields, plenty of other watering places, plenty of other wells he could have come to first off, and yet he comes to the very right one. Is that an accident? Is that a stroke of good luck? Is that some unexplained thing that's happened? Of course not. God has directed his paths. The very spot. You see, God's guidance descends to particulars, to places, to the most minute and seemingly ordinary of things. You've heard sometimes, haven't you, the language of the world where a stroke of good luck has happened to someone and it's said he was in the right place at the right time. And of course it's referring to luck or chance or something. Or if some terrible accident has happened, they say, well, it's just so sad that he was the wrong person in the wrong place at the wrong time. But you see, we are not hostage to fortune, dear friends, in these ways. God guides and God ensures that his prayerful, believing people are in the right place in his time. And the guidance and providence of God is that particular. And we've known, perhaps, haven't we, in our own experience, how that if we had been in some other place, at the same time, how much we would have missed. If things had not exactly happened as they did, where would we be now? Well, that was impossible with the guidance of God. He looked, and behold, a well in the field. No believer needs to ask, but what if I miss the way? What if I get it wrong? What if I end up in the wrong place? Well, you see, if you've committed your way to the Lord and you're trusting also in him, he will bring it to pass. You'll observe the providence bringing it to pass. It will be infallibly done if we're trusting in him. You won't go wrong. Some huge, big things in life we have to make decisions over, don't we? Should I leave? Should I go to there? Should I change direction? Should I do something that's going to alter the whole course of my future? And you say, what if I get it wrong? What if I mess up on it? But you see, if you're really committing your way to him, trusting also in him, he shall bring it to pass. You will not go wrong. God will not allow you to go wrong. If you really sincerely want to keep within his will, the providence will operate it unerringly. And Jacob saw that well. So the very spot. And then look, the very place. Verse 4. He sees these men, shepherds. And he says, my brethren. Not that they were his actual brothers. They were perfect strangers. But you see, they shared the same occupation as shepherds, and so he could call them my fellow shepherds or my brethren. Where are you from then? It's very homely, isn't it, and agricultural. You can imagine if it were in Devon, this one farmer would say to another, where be you from then? And they say, oh, I be from so and so. Well, it's like this here, you see, my brethren, whence be ye? And they said, oh, of Haran are we. The very place. The very place. He wanted to be in Paddan Aram. Well, that is the area, like the county, if you like. Haran was the actual place itself, the city or the town. Flintshire, the county, Holywell, the town. Well, this Haran is what Holywell is to Flintshire. And it's the same place where Laban and the family lived. He's come to the right place. What a remarkable piece of divine guidance, isn't it? God has been with him and has kept him in all places where he went. But look, in verse 5, the very men whom he needed to meet. Verse 5, know ye Laban, the son of Nahor? That's his next question, inevitably, you see. He's come to the right place, but do these men here know Laban? And they said, we know him. This is marvellous. This is his neighbouring, working with him on the land, keeping the sheep, the flocks. Tremendous. The very men that he needed to meet who could tell him that Laban was living in that part. And look, again, verse 6, the very one he needed to meet. As Jacob asked them after the welfare of Laban, they said, oh, he's well, and look, Rachel his daughter cometh with the sheep. See, he's getting closer and closer with every step, isn't it? It's the very daughter of Laban coming now, leading her father's flock to this well for watering. And all at the same time that Jacob has just arrived here in this place. Now, isn't that amazing? The providence of God working these things out and bringing these things together for Jacob. You see, this is how it works. Marvel and wonder. You're almost a spectator. You're seeing it happen before your eyes. God ordering events and unfolding these things for Jacob to observe. Very, very wonderful. God's faithful word that is faithfully kept. And providence brought it about. And if you think about it, that in verse 9 is the crowning touch, isn't it? Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she kept them. See, the Lord has not only brought Jacob to the place and to the family as he needed to, but he's actually brought his future wife to him as well. And God has done more than he promised. I am with thee and will keep thee in all places whither thou goest. And he's done that, and he's also brought along one who will be his wife and part of the next phase in God's dealings. I wonder if we're on the lookout like this for God's providence, dear friends. When we commit our difficult way to the Lord, and when we trust in him, believing the promise, do we seek to observe what God will do and see how he will keep his promise for us? You see, Psalm 107, verse 43, whoso is wise and will observe these things, even they shall understand the loving kindness of the Lord. Providence is something to follow and something to observe in order that you might follow it. And it's happening all around you. And we need to pray, don't we? Lord, make me wise that I might observe and see and understand thy loving kindness in thy dealings. Well, that's what he did. Now, these are obvious providences that were wrought for Jacob. Let's consider, before we conclude, some hidden providences as well, because you see, the wonderful thing is that God's providence is like those wheels within wheels in Ezekiel's prophecy. You see some on the outside, but there are others within, hidden, which you don't see. And a lot is going on behind the scenes and secretly as well. And look, if you think about verses 11 and 12, you'll see that there was something like that happening here. Jacob kissed Rachel, lifted up his voice and wept, and Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's brother, father's relative, not literal brother, but the broad term for brother, nephew in fact, and that he was Rebecca's son, and she ran and told her father. And then of course Laban heard the tidings of Jacob, his sister's son. Verse 13, he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house. And Jacob told Laban all these things that had happened and so on. But there's the introduction to Laban. And that spells another phase of God's dealings in providence with Jacob, which Jacob has no inkling about at this time, does he? Because you see, Jacob has now met in Laban an older, much more experienced version of himself. That's what Laban is. And if Jacob has begun to show his deviousness and his tendency and skill in tricking and supplanting and so on, Laban's been doing it more years. And Laban is more skilled at it than even Jacob. And you see, God in providence has led Jacob to Laban, marrying into his family, working for him, in order to give him a dose of Jacob's own myth. Quite justly. And Jacob had no idea of what was coming, did he? But God knew, and God brought it about. And you see, this is the sort of hidden aspect of God's providence. We can see the more outward and obvious ways God guides and provides for us, and it's marvellous, but we don't always know what may be in store for us as time goes on. But it will be always for our good. But Jacob here, you see, is going to be deceived. He's going to be exploited. And he's going to have many family sorrows. It's going to culminate with Joseph, isn't it? For 20 years he's going to work for Laban. And it's going to be exploitation. And then there'll be those 13 years, won't it, where he thought that Joseph was dead after he's returned to the land of Canaan. 13 years agony over Joseph and so on. So that's more than 30 years of discipline from the hand of God. And that's quite something, isn't it? That's going to be a long, drawn-out process of fatherly chastening to weather Jacob's character and get out of him this crooked, perverse, devious, supplanting nature and build into him the godly, trusting, gracious, upright nature which befits someone who is called Israel instead of Jacob. It's going to be a long discipline. You might say, dear me, 30 odd years now. It would have been better had he stayed behind in Canaan. No, it would not have been better, because it was all God's purpose to work in Jacob and make him the man that God called him to be. And you see, it's like that with us. And as you read the Bible, you'll be more and more amazed at the length of time God is prepared to work on someone, and the variety of things God is prepared to bring to bear upon that someone, to mould that someone's life. He the potter, and that someone the clay. And it'll be so for us, dear friends. Years the Lord may take. And you see, God does not consult our happiness. He consults our benefit and our profit. And in that, of course, is our happiness. But God is not in the business, if I may put it like this, of making his people simply happy. He's making his people holy, and there is their happiness. When we submit to his hand and accept his disciplines and humbly learn from them and repent and correct and amend and reform and obey him and follow him, then comes the changes that are needed, and then comes the blessing and the happiness as we grow closer to him. Hebrews 12 and verse 10, verse 11, you see, it says there that no chastening for the present is a joyous thing, but a grievous thing. Nevertheless, afterward, it bringeth forth the peaceable fruits of righteousness unto them that are exercised thereby. Afterward. It's not pleasant sometimes. Never promised that it will be pleasant, but it'll be necessary and beneficial. It's child training. It's bringing us up. It's correcting us and amending us and changing us and making us the people he calls us to be. And here you see he meets with Laban. And although Laban is going to be a right character to have to have as a father-in-law and to have to work for, but Laban's going to be God's instrument of blessing to Jacob in the end. And it's so strange, isn't it, in life, we Christians, those very individuals who seem to be the hardest to cope with are in God's purpose, the ones who do us most good. If God sanctifies and blesses that experience to us. You've heard of the Chinese believer. Now, I never get his name correct. Is it Wing Mong Deo? Or Wang Ming Do, or something like that. Anyway, he wrote a book, and it's called A Stone Made Smooth, and it's the story of his life. And he likens himself to a stone with all kinds of facets and edges to it. But he says that if you take a stone like that and put it in the river, and then the river water flows over it, the action of the water flowing over it and sort of knocking it against all the other stones changes it into a pebble, a smooth stone. And he says it's like that in living together in the church fellowship. It's like that living in the family. It's like that with Christian friends and all that we interact with. They rub against us, and it's the action of God's discipline flowing over us and so on. And although we rub one another up the wrong way, as we say, in doing that we actually rub ourselves smooth. And you know how that people speak about having the rough edges knocked off you and smoothed out and angular bits taken away and so on, so that we're smoothed. Well, you see, it's like that here. And Laban was like that to Jacob. And our most trying individuals, perhaps, can be like that to us. And instead of saying, Lord, why do I have to live with such a person? Why do I have to cope with such an individual? Oh, why don't you take that person out of my life? Or 100 miles away from me? It would be much better for us to say, Lord, sanctify the effect this is having upon me. For I know that this hasn't happened by accident. This person is here in my life by thy appointment. Teach me to learn the lessons I need to know about myself. And show me how I can profit from this trying experience. And if you do that, the Lord will help. And the Lord will bless you and make that experience a blessing. This is what Jacob had to do with Laban. And he couldn't get out of it 20 years before God said, arise and go back to the land of Canaan, to thy father's house. 20 years. Well, that's how it is. That's the providence of God, you see. And Jacob never dreamed that it would be like this. Perhaps he thought, oh, this is wonderful. I'm being led now to my mother's family and my wife and family and work and a new life here, safe from Esau. This is great. A new beginning. Well, it was great in another way. It was great in a more important way. For Jacob's spiritual and moral good. So we are able to thank God for the Labans in our lives, who, though no real friends to us, perhaps personally, are God's instruments of gracious discipline and blessing to us. if we will learn the lessons and humble ourselves under God's hand in it. And the other thing is the fact that the whole note on which Jacob started here was positive, wasn't it? Because look, in verse 7, he comes to these shepherds and he says, in effect, what are you doing having these flocks of yours lying down on the grass here? It's midday. They shouldn't be here. Why don't you get on and water them and then take them back to their pastures? You're wasting good pasturage time. And they're explaining, well, we've got to wait till everyone has brought their flocks, you see, because at a certain point they lift the stone off the well's mouth, and then we can water all the animals, and we put the stone back, and then they're taken to their pastures again. He takes things into his own hands. Verse 10. And he goes up and he rolls the stone from the well's mouth and waters the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. And maybe there's a little bit of bravado about this. After all, Rachel comes up, you see, and here's the strong man, Jacob, and he lifts this stone off the well's mouth by his own strength, and clunk, it goes on the ground. And then he fetches up the water and waters Rachel's flock. And Rachel being Rachel, and Jacob being this muscular, sunburnt man, there's all that kind of thing probably in it as well. But you see, he starts off on a good note, because now she goes and tells Dad and says, there's this man and he's taken the stone off the well and he's watered your flocks and he's Laban, your relative. And then Laban runs out to greet him and so on. And it means that Jacob has arrived not as someone who's run away from home begging a place in Laban's family, but really as a benefactor and someone who's done a service for Laban and for Rachel. And in a way, in God's secret providence, it's meant that Jacob is able to start off on that footing to stand him in good stead, so that in all the troubles afterwards, Laban isn't able to say to Jacob, you came here in the beginning, you were a fugitive from home, you had nothing that you could commend yourself with, and I took you into my home and you owe everything to me. No, it wasn't like that. No, Jacob comes on his own terms, and he's got dignity and self-respect of a brother shepherd who starts off by doing a good deed for Laban over this well and the watering of the flocks and so on. And that was helpful, and it was considerate of the Lord, wasn't it, to deal in that way, to start Jacob off on this positive note. Well, dear friends, that's the secret providence. Jacob would take a little time before he could observe these things, but he would find that the Lord had gone before and was doing all things well. So, believing the promise, dear friends, trust also in him, observing the providence, and he shall bring it to pass. I close in the words of Calvin, who says this: therefore, whenever we may wander in uncertainty through intricate windings, we may contemplate with eyes of faith the secret providence of God, which governs us and our affairs, and leads us to unexpected results. The intricate windings of providence, you see. But there is that which we can trust, and that which we can observe, and it will lead us to results we perhaps didn't expect, more and more wonderfully than we could have ever imagined. Well, may the Lord then bless his word, and may the God of Jacob be a God to us. Let us sing together.